This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Welcome, everybody, to a Tuesday edition of the OBP, the Orange Bloods podcast, brought to you by the fine folks over at Texas Card House, 183 and Anderson Mill, the state of Texas's premier poker club. If you haven't been there, check it out. They've got games for days. It's almost 24 hours a day. It's the closest thing to Vegas that you're going to get. Tournament games, cash games, you name it, they have it, and they will always have it, basically 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Outside of like just a couple of hours every day. They're close to being 24 hours a day. Not quite there yet, but it won't be long. So we've got spring football to talk about today. Like that's at the forefront, I think, of what everybody's thinking about. At the Longhorns on Monday held their first practice of the spring. Nothing too crazy on the opening day. No pads, nothing like that. Simply shirts and shorts and helmets and an opportunity for the Longhorns to begin step one of this 2019 project, which, you know, it's interesting to me that we get a little further removed from the Georgia game and we get a little deeper into the offseason and we get by proxy, like closer to the start of the 2019 season. We're like in the middle of all of these things now. We're almost in the middle of the dead season because it's March. This is now month number three of no college football. We still have a long way to go. Like we're in the beginning of the middle of the off season, and yet it coincides with the beginning of spring football. And I don't know why. Maybe it was, you know, I was looking at Alex Dunlap's notes yesterday, and I think a lot of the conversation that I've been having about this team is you think about what they have coming back. You've got Ellinger at quarterback. I am a monster Keontae Ingram fan. I don't know that he can shoulder the running game by himself, although he's not going to have to with little Jordan Humphrey. We can talk about that in a little bit as well, because the presence of the freshman, you know, impossible not to recognize and pay attention to on day one. Some of those guys look good. No, you know, I said that they look good. Like I'm aroused by their general well-being and great shape. No, they just, as far as football players go, it looks like the Longhorns, you know, back in the day under Mack Brown, you could tell they had a really good team because those dudes would get off the bus and you would just see a bunch of future NFL players. And I think Tom Herman feels that way about his team. But I've thought about the returning guys on this team, and I think I've paid, as I project ahead towards this season, and I think about what's on the table for this team, both in terms of the Big 12, both couple that with what are we talking about on a national landscape? Because if you're winning the Big 12, in theory, you're putting yourself exactly in the position that you want to be to compete in the playoffs, which then means you're competing for a national championship. So I've thought of Ellinger and Ingram and Colin Johnson and Devin Duvernay and Sam Cosmi and, you know, you add Parker Braun, you think about on the defensive side of the ball, all of those kids in the secondary. You know that Joseph Asai is a guy that everybody internally thinks is on the cusp of greatness. They think that guy's going to be a great player. And so when I think about the returning players, Caden Stearns and Brandon Jones, and, you know, to me, like, the shock value, the sticker label on this team is pretty sexy. And they have arguably the best quarterback in the conference. They've got one of the best wide receivers in the conference. They've got maybe the best left tackle in the conference. They've got the pieces to have the best secondary in the conference. I think everybody right now feels really confident that Texas has the coaching staff to lead it to greatness. And yet I found myself looking at Alex's day one practice report, and it really set in that the conversation that we were having with Anwar Richardson on the Ticket City podcast, I don't even remember. It might have been 2 weeks ago. Maybe it was last week, where we talked about, you know, what's the bar for this team? And Anwar was like, look, it's a disappointing season if this team ends up at the Texas Bowl. And my contention was, woo, Anwar, you don't know the Texas fan base very well. Like, it can pretty much deem anything a failure that doesn't end with a championship. Because I believe that the bar for this school each and every year, if you don't win the Big 12 championship, this season was not a success. Now, there are caveats to that. If you make a major bowl game and win it, or even just make a major bowl game, if you make a major bowl game, the Sugar Bowl or the Orange Bowl or, you know, one of the big dogs, the Rose Bowl, then I think you can say, well, you didn't win the conference, but you went to one of those games and you won it. And so it was a success. Look at what Texas did a year ago. But my general rule of thumb, and I say this for every Texas sport, although I think Texas fans, Texas women's basketball fans certainly take exception to this. I don't know that every, like for me, the bar for the University of Texas in every sport is you win the Big 12 championship. Like that should be the goal. And if you don't do it, it doesn't mean lower the goals. Well, Oklahoma just keeps on winning these Big 12 championships. Maybe we should just make it top two. No, no. Now, look, ultimately, it's not for me to decide. It's for you guys to decide. It's for those of you that are paying money to watch this team, that are investing all of your emotions into it. Man, is that good enough? Is that good enough for the University of Texas? Well, we're close in every sport. Because regardless of what the competition looks like, the goal for the University of Texas should always be you win the Big 12 championship. That's how you define success, being the best, being champions, competing at the highest level. And I look at this Texas team and I pretty much think to myself, look, it's a failure. This season coming up is an abject failure. If Texas doesn't get to the Big 12 championship game, if they can't be in the top two of the Big 12, like at right off the top, bad year for this team after what it just finished. So Anwar says Texas Bowl. I say Alamo. I say any bowl. I say any bowl where Texas isn't, you know, playing a nationally elite team in a nationally elite game, whether it's the playoffs or something else. Like there has to be a cutoff line. And I think anything short of that, it's okay to say it was pretty good, but it wasn't a success. I don't know that it has to be an indictment on the team as a whole to say, look, you guys tried really hard. You did some good things. But ultimately, based on the way we establish what success is around here, you can't call it a success. You know, Mac Brown used to try really hard to make unsuccessful seasons successful. Didn't win the Big 12 championship? Okay. Didn't go to a major bowl game? Okay. However, we won all of the games against teams from the state of Texas, so that makes us the Texas state champs. Yeah! And they'd put those on rings. State champions. Because you beat A&M Tech and Baylor back in the day. Would have been no TCU. So I have this idea that the Longhorns need to be, the bar for me does not drop simply because in a number of programs on the 40 acres, consistency and quality have fallen. You know, in men's basketball, I suppose you don't have to win necessarily the Big 12 championship, but you need to make it to the Sweet 16. Like anything short of those two things is just not a successful season. You can win 22 games, not that this Texas team is going to, but let's say you win 22, 23 games, you make the tournament, you finish third in the Big 12, you lose in the round of 32. That's just not a successful season as far as I'm concerned. So I personally have defined what success is for this football program really high. Anwar has it lower. I have it higher. However, I feel Anwar Richardson a little bit more today than maybe I did yesterday. Anwar has not quite been as bullish on the Longhorns as probably anybody else on the staff. And, you know, I think yesterday I'm reading Alex's practice report, and I get it. I get Anwar's reluctance a little more today than maybe I did yesterday, because when you look at the depth chart, when you look at the two deep, when you see the players that currently are manning first team positions for the Longhorns, for all of the unbelievable get off the bus first type good looking talent that this team has, there are a lot of question marks. And, you know, you start with the defense. I feel a little bit like I was the boy who cried wolf with this conversation a year ago. I looked at the loss of Puna Ford. I looked at the loss of Malik Jefferson. I looked at the loss of Holton Hill and Deshaun Elliott and the top end talent that are all Sunday players. I looked at it and thought, that's not easily replaced. But Chris Nelson came in and did a fairly decent Puna Ford impersonation. And Charles Omenihu was a first-team All-Big 12 player and a potential first-round draft pick in this year's NFL draft. So you looked at the pieces and you go, okay, well, and you had Brecken Hager coming back, who just the year before had been an All-Big 12 type player, only to see it completely fall apart on him as a senior. But you could see that, you could see Gary Johnson and go, okay, well, that guy can do a Malik Jefferson impersonation. And I suppose when you look at the Texas roster, it has a lot of that going on. But let's just start with the defensive line. Because if there's anything today that after the first day of practice is causing me slight reservation, I don't know what to think about the Texas defense right now. I don't know what to think, in part because the front six, there's really not a front seven at Texas, not when a team plays as much nickel as Texas does, unless you want to include a guy like B.J. Foster in that front seven to make it seven. They really do a front six, which puts a lot of pressure on the defensive line. It has to be good. Texas can't play defense the way it wants. No defense can play defense with a weak defensive line, but you can't run a three-man front out in the Big 12 with all of those offenses. You have to have a defensive line that can control the line of scrimmage, that can create pass rush. You don't always want to be leaning on having to bring extra guys. It does open you up in the back end. Nothing's free in this world, except in a world where your defensive line can dominate games. And a year ago, I don't know that Texas had a dominant defensive line, but in the biggest games, the games that Texas won, you think about that Oklahoma game. And even though it turned out to be a high-scoring shootout and Texas needed the ball late in October to win that game, it was one up front. It was one in the middle part of that game when the Texas defensive line and its front six dominated the Oklahoma offensive line, which was the best in the country, and made Kyler Murray uncomfortable. They did the same thing against Georgia. You know, that was a game where defensively Texas just worked its Georgia counterparts. Same thing in other games. Same thing against USC. Same thing against TCU. In the end, Texas had, and it may be that Texas has that this year, but when I look at that opening group defensive line, yesterday, you had Taquan Graham, you had Gerald Wilbon, and you had Malcolm Roach. Now look, you're not including Keandre Coburn, who was not out there at practice today and weirdly is dealing with some things. Was it? I'm getting him and a Jomo mixed up. Just like Alex did. 98-99, kind of the same thing. When you look at Graham and you look at Wilbon and you look at Roach, I just see a defense. That's your first team defensive line. And Taquan Graham, for me, a year ago, might have been the most disappointing player in the program. He was the first defensive lineman essentially on the field as a reserve. He's the guy that backed up Hager. He's the guy that was behind Ominihue. He was a guy that, you know, I think that they expected more from him. He just didn't produce at a high level. Well, now he's a starter. Now he's the best Texas has as a left side defensive end. And I don't know what to, I don't know that Taquan Graham is an upgrade over Brecken Hager, who was not a plus player for the Longhorns a year ago. Consequently, I look at Gerald Wilbon and I think to myself, he's not as good as Chris Nelson. And yes, Chris Nelson took a step up, but Gerald Wilbon so far at his best has been a solid, solid backup role-playing defensive lineman. He only finds himself currently in a starting position, I suppose, in part because you've got some injuries up front. So it may be that a younger guy ends up taking that job. But I'm not sure. I'm not quite sure what to think, what I'm supposed to, I don't know. Just something about that defensive line. When Malcolm Roach, who is a linebacker, but now he's not a linebacker, it never feels like Texas quite knows what to do with Malcolm Roach. Now he's a starter. He's the guy replacing Charles Ominihue. And I am a guy that a couple of years ago thought that Malcolm Roach had a chance to be the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year coming out of his freshman season. He's had injuries in both of the last two seasons. He's shown flashes of playmaking ability. But to say that consistency, and not just with him, like the coaches using him consistently in ways where he can succeed, it's just been a problem. It's been a bit of a blind spot, I think, for Todd Orlando in his first 2 years. Whereas it seemed like Malcolm Roach as a defensive end and a four-man front, that seemed perfect for him. It does not seem like that defensive end position in a three-man front has been his bread and butter. So they played him at linebacker, and it hasn't completely worked out there either. I mean, those are your three starting defensive linemen. And I'm not sure what to say about that. Like, I don't know. All of those guys as individuals, I'm probably cooler on Wilbon as a high-end player than I am the other two guys. Taquan Graham is a guy that the coaches are singing the praises of in the offseason. And I think they're trying to build him up because they need him. When I hear Taquan, when I hear people from inside the building, as Anwar would say, hype up Taquan Graham, I'm fully reminded that they need Taquan Graham to step up, and he hasn't yet done so. And I think that if you're talking about give me like the five most important player developments of this upcoming season, I think you would have to put Taquan Graham in the top five. Texas desperately needs that guy to not be good. They need him to be very good. And he hasn't been good yet. And just to be completely clear, I was right. Keandre Coburn is the guy dealing with the kidney issues. And that, even though Tom Herman said that, you know, he's expected to be back by the end of the spring, that was kind of scary to read. The quote from Tom Herman yesterday was, quote, Keandre Coburn is dealing with some kidney issues that we're still waiting on some results to get him cleared. It's his second one where he's had to, I've written it down, but it's somewhere where his levels are high. He was having pain in his back. So to have a second one in 7 months was obviously a red flag. A lot of blood tests. They've biopsied a piece of muscle to try and dig in there and figure out what's going on. What the fuck? That's not good. That's not good. I'm not saying it's terrible because I don't know. But let me just put it like this. I've never heard of any football player having to have kidney tests where they biopsied a piece of his muscle. I have never heard that before. As far as I know, in the history of the University of Texas football program in the last 25 years, I have never heard, and not to say that it hasn't happened, not to say that HIPAA, like I don't know everything, but I've never heard of any Texas players not participating in practice because of kidney issues that are multiple in occurrence over the course of half a year. And they still don't, according to Tom Herman, they still don't know what's up with his kidneys. And they biopsied a piece of muscle to, quote, dig in there and figure out what's going on. That was, for me, the single, like, Patrick Hudson, of all the news that was reported yesterday, you had the Patrick Hudson news that he was going to retire. And shout out to Patrick Hudson, who seems to be doing kind of the Payton Kelly. No, it was Matt Nader, excuse me. It was Matt Nader that had the heart issue. And while that was obviously devastating for him, he was so productive in the way that he moved forward from that, being around the team and not letting the loss of football like completely define him, in part because he found something else in football to do. I always thought Matt Nader, as mature and, like, I don't know, self-aware of important things, he seemed to get that. And I've gotten kind of the same vibe from Patrick Hudson. He can't play football. He's not healthy enough to play football. But he doesn't seem to be a guy that's having a hard time moving on. He's still involved in the program. They're finding a role inside of the program for him to contribute in. I think Herman said he's going to do stuff with the trainers. Like, right on for Patrick Hudson, man. Clearly a devastating situation to have to deal with. But if framed properly, just a hiccup in life. And maybe it means not playing football, but, you know, there's still a lot for Patrick Hudson to do, to aim for, to want to live to do. And so far, everything that I've seen says he's looking at this situation like that. But the Coburn thing, I don't know. On one hand, Herman says the prognosis is good. On the other hand, he says they're biopsying a piece of muscle and they're trying to figure out what the hell's going on. So how the hell is the prognosis good? They still don't know what's going wrong and they have to do biopsies on a piece of muscle. So Tom Herman can say he's not overly concerned. That seems problematic, though. And I'm not trying to scream fire in a crowded theater. All I'm telling you is the Keandre Coburn news makes it sound like, to me, he is out indefinitely. The Keandre Coburn news explains why he hasn't been a full participant in offseason training. I don't know what it means in terms of what happens in the spring, whether he practices or plays at all. I can only guess. But Tom Herman, in one side of his mouth, said the prognosis is good, but the other side of his mouth said they don't know yet. So everybody keep that kid in their prayers. Like, that's that kidney issues when you're, what, 18, 19 years old, and they're multiple and they can't be explained. Could be nothing, right? Like, I don't know. Could be like, hey, take this medicine, and in 2 months, everything will be fine. Like, I don't know. I don't know about the kidneys. But I do know that what Tom Herman is describing is not something that we see happen with any sort of frequency at this level. And it was, again, a reminder. You take that dude, and maybe this was the biggest thing. Because we look at some of these positions and we go, well, Coburn's going to be there. And he's going to be a badass and maybe a future pro. So the defensive line's going to be fine. But one of the truths about the defensive line and what we've been talking about for years, it's not about sometimes even your top guys. I would contend the Longhorns got away with murder last year. Like, 2 years ago, the injuries were awful. We saw Charlie's teams have injuries. We saw Tom Herman in his first year, they had injuries. Texas got by pretty well last year on the injury front. When you think about, they really only had a couple of defensive linemen that they could absolutely count on. Like, imagine last season without Charles Omenihu, where Marquez Bimage or Taquan Graham had to play a lot. And it would have changed the season if there had been an injury to Chris Nelson. Gerald Wilbon is not Chris Nelson. And Chris Nelson wasn't Puna Ford. And for most of the season, I don't think you would say the Texas defense was awesome. They're okay. they had moments, some really good moments. You think about that Georgia game. And then there were other moments where it was like, hey, man, Texas just playing without a defense this year. Like the personnel wasn't that good. There aren't a number of guys who are leaving to go pro from that side of the ball that, you know, can't be replaced. And I tend to give Texas the benefit of the doubt with guys like Chris Boyd and Devontae Davis, even though those guys are NFL players, even though those guys, you know, Chris Boyd tested really well at the combine. He is an upper elite level college athlete. And I don't really worry about the secondary. I think Anthony Cook's going to be fine. I don't know that Kobe Boyce is going to be the starter on the other side. But there is just the defense in general, I'm not sure about. The defensive line, I have all kinds of questions about, and the news yesterday about Keandre Coburn didn't help on that front. It makes me more leery. I think about the linebackers, and again, it's another situation where I'm just not sure about. Because the starting Mike linebacker right now is Jeffrey McCulloch. And Jeffrey McCulloch has been one of these guys that we've all described as having star upside, and yet it hasn't materialized. You know, we talked, Joseph Asai, I'm willing to just say he's going to be great. But I don't know that about Jeffrey McCulloch, and I don't know that about Delia Deoye. And I just look at that front six right now, and I think it's a big old crapshoot. And I think it is the thing more than anything else that will define what happens with this team this season. Because if that group can't be really good, I mean, Texas is just going to find itself in a bunch of games. And it may, and sometimes in the Big 12, it just turns into that anyway. You're playing 50-50 games. The team that ends up with the ball and enough time left to get the final score ends up winning the game. That's a hard way to win a championship. So, after one day of Texas football practice, I'm not saying that I'm changing my thoughts on what I think this team is, where it should be ranked. Again, I think the personnel with this group coming into this season is the kind of top-end personnel on what Texas does have coming back that I think Texas should be really, really good. However, as Anwar Richardson has rightfully pointed out, and I'm kind of coming around to after just looking at it on paper and the Coburn news, and you realize this team isn't yet deep enough to lose top-end players and not and I kind of lost my train of thought. When you think about that defensive line, we've been talking about in recruiting for years that it was eventually going to catch up with the Longhorns that they've recruited so poorly on the defensive line, both under Charlie and now under Tom Herman, where, you know, they just haven't, you know, that big class of defensive linemen that came in, what, in 2015 just didn't quite pan out? Not like it was supposed to. And you still got a couple of those guys on campus with DeAndre Christmas and Gerald Wilbon, and yet it's still, those guys aren't plus players, and they're going to be counted on to hopefully develop into those kinds of players. I don't know what to think about the ends at all. I don't know if Malcolm Roach is a fish out of water at the position that he's in. I don't know if Taquan Graham is truly ready to assume a really critical. They need him to replace a lot of Omenihue's production. Somebody has to. And then I look at that backup group on the defensive line, and I see Jamar Chisholm, Mauro Ajomo, and Marquez Bimage. Bimage made a huge play in the TCU game a year ago, and that was it. He forced that fumble, which was down the field anyway. It wasn't like he made that in the backfield. He made that as a chase and pursue type play, which kudos to him, but he didn't make any other plays the rest of the season. I have no faith that Jamar Chisholm can play at this level. So I'm just not sure. That's where I am. I feel like this really important part of the Texas football team is if we want to talk about top five most important developments, we could point to guys like Denzel Okafor. We could point to guys in a secondary like DeMarvion Overshown or any of the Anthony Cook. You could make the case that the top five most important developments for this Texas football team going into 2019 are all players in the front six. Graham, Wilbon, Roach, McCulloch, Adeoye. Those two, for whether you're talking about Coburn or Ojomo, like Mark, like all of those guys, they have got to, all those guys got to be put into a pile. And Texas has to find a way to get three plus players at a minimum out of that group. Biggest single question mark in the spring. No doubt about it. Because I can look at linebacker and I put them in that same group. But for me, this is about the defensive line. This is about the problems that Texas has had in recruiting the defensive line over the course of the last half decade. To me, Texas has got, may potentially pay the piper this season. Because I don't know what to think of Graham. I don't know what to think of Wilbon. I'm not sure what Roach is, even though I've been a super advocate of him. I don't know that he's in a, I think he's in a position where they need him. I don't know if he's in a position where he's going to thrive. Where's the pass rush coming from that group? It did not exist a year ago. So there's been a lot of buzz about Taquan Graham. It's time for him to put it together on the football field. This spring, what those guys do is critical. And if we come out of the spring and it doesn't feel like Taquan Graham is taking the next step, and it doesn't feel like Malcolm Roach is at home, and it doesn't feel like Jeffrey McCulloch is ever going to be that guy that we've all thought he's going to eventually become, like, he's run out of seasons. It's now. It's now or never. If those guys don't step up, Texas is going to be super young on defense. They're going to be putting guys out on defense that just, I don't think, are quite ready to assume a role on a team that is talking about winning championships and playing in a playoff. So, oh, it feels like I've been negative. I think this is a reality check mark. I think as Texas goes into the spring, it can't be ignored. It is the main piece of focus. It is the thing that we should all be watching, because we know Sam's going to be good, and we know Colin Johnson's going to catch a bunch of balls. And I think we know that the offense, I think, is going to be really good. They've got on the offensive side of the ball up front something that the defense doesn't have, which is something to take to the bank of high quality. And actually, they have multiple pieces. I could make the case that from left to right, Shackelford at center with Parker Braun at guard with Sam Cosmi at tackle. I mean, that's as good as any three-man wall in college football coming back this season. That is the best lineman from Texas a year ago who will be potentially an emerging first-round draft pick. You're talking about the best guard in the ACC a year ago, and you're talking about, you know, I think Shackelford was second-team All-Big 12 on one list. Maybe honorable mention elsewhere. Coaches, the Big 12 coaches seem to like him. You don't have that on defense. There's nobody in that front six that a year ago anybody of consequence thought had that type of year. Nobody thought Taquan Graham was worthy of anything. Nobody thought that about Joe Wilbon. Nobody thought that about Malcolm Roach. The difference between a year ago and this year is that a year ago, the pieces that had to come back were just more proven than these pieces. So batter up, play ball. All of those cliches, it's time for that side of the ball to ease some concerns. Concerns that today stood out to me a little bit more so than they had the last couple of months. Where we go from here remains to be seen. All right, I'm going to wrap this bad boy up. I'll do a podcast again maybe tomorrow. You might get another OBP on a Wednesday, definitely before the end of the week is over. For now, thanks from the guys over at Texas Card House and you for listening on the Yak. We'll do it again soon. Later.